Off the Ball on News Talk 106 to 108.
And we shall wonder if one day our game is played on the other planets. We will have interplanetary competition.
Your job now is to stand by our new manager.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
If my granny had bought, you'd be the granddad.
Big Sam Aladicio, that's right.
So Sky have been shown highlights of the Merseyside derby over the years. They were showing Steven Gerrard nailing you.
Yeah.
You weren't happy. You got up. Ooh, 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 not happy with that, son. Second yellow, Steven Gerrard sent off.
Yeah. Yeah. It was...
Alan Green accused you of diving.
Yeah, I was accused of diving. I remember it was played back to me a while ago, actually, that I was accused of diving for that when, to be fair to Gerrard, he nailed me. Good, to be fair, good lad. It's what you want in those sort of games as well. So he caught me and he got sent off. Yeah, it was good though. Good game, that.
Mm. What's Liverpool, the city, like the week of a Merseyside derby?
It's more than a month of it as well. It's certainly the anticipation from the Evertonians anyway.
Is it bigger for Everton fans?
I don't know. I think it is a massive game in the city. Phil probably spoke about it last. Phil Neville, when he was on with us on Monday, talking about this, just basically saying that he felt as though that it perhaps might have been a bigger derby for Evertonians. I don't know. I don't necessarily see that. Everton have not been a big enough rival to Liverpool for too long, haven't they? That's been the problem. So,
the games we were watching last night when we were stuck in that wormhole of YouTube of Liverpool Everton in the '80s. Like Everton are strong.
Yeah.
Everton are winning titles in the middle of the 80s. Like these are games that really mean something.
Yeah, exactly. And you think of the players that they had as well, the Peter Reeds, the Sharps, Sheedys, of course, as well. The Everton were very strong in those days. You say it was that's what I would have first remembered. I remember those two teams going head to head, and you would have seen these games, and you would have been, of course, getting the pictures from it. I remember the FA Cup final in 86, and was it 89, wasn't it? And you just remember these games when you're growing up, when you're a boy. So they're the ones that stick in your mind, really.
Was it venomous? Like, was the atmosphere around the grounds from the supporters? Like, did you feel when you were playing in a Merseyside derby?
Yeah,
the Liverpool supporters bloody hated you.
Yeah, there was that. It certainly was that. Yeah, I think, and again, probably the Liverpool players that I've spoken to that have played, and it said that they got absolutely abused constantly from the Evertonians at the game. I think it was Chris Kirkland, the one that highlighted it to me first. Kirky said that stood in front of the Gladys Street end, Evertonians just abusing him through the course of the game, which you can imagine. I certainly would have had it. Certainly been a wide man when you stood out on the touchline and you're waiting for the ball and you're just getting up. You're getting
Scouse accent, 20,000
scouts, or let's say 10,000-15,000 scouts behind you, just giving you loads. They were great games. They were really, really good games to play in. But you mean, in answer to your original question, though, I certainly felt there was that anticipation a week in advance, and certainly the lead up to it this week doesn't help, I suppose, Everton, that they've had this game tonight over in Limassol. But a majority of the players have all stayed behind, so they can actually soak up that real tension that goes around this game in the build-up. Yeah.
Gerrard, brilliant goal! What an equaliser by Steven Gerrard! 12 minutes gone. Fantastic start to the Merseyside derby. And a goal by Ferguson. Duncan Ferguson has put Everton in front here. It's his first goal for Everton. Joe Royal, it doesn't show, but he must be full of emotion about that. Goodison goes wild.
But Torres has got the chance here. It's taken him less than 7 minutes to score his first goal in a Merseyside derby.
Here's Coutinho. What a run! What a finish! That is Coutinho back to his best. Might drop for Jackie Elka.
Oh, what a goal! What a goal!
Richard Dunn is on the line. Evening, Richard.
Good evening. How are you?
So you've played Merseyside, you've played Manchester. Which is the better derby? The casting vote?
For noise and atmosphere, I'd probably say the Merseyside derby.
The Merseyside of Goodison?
Yeah. Even at Anfield, the atmosphere was better. I think when I was playing for Man City, they weren't much of a competition for Man United in terms of... It was a derby, but the... it didn't mean an awful lot to United, I don't think. Whereas the Merseyside derby, when we never lost to Liverpool, and the spirit around and leading up to them games was really good. And obviously Liverpool wanted to get one over us because it had been a while. But yeah, it was a good build up to them.
I just want to say to Rich, Nathan touched on something before, Rich, that you were 17 playing the derby. I totally wasn't aware of this one, and I'm probably going to, I probably know the answer that you're going to give here, but what was it like? You're a 17 year old and you're playing in that big game. It's massive for you, particularly if I spoke about the games that I would have seen growing up. That would have been such an intimidating game to play in at that such a young age. How did you feel?
Kev, I missed half that question. I didn't
know. You're probably better off. Basically, what I said is, what was it like to play in that Merseyside derby when you were 17?
Yeah, it was probably, it's one of those things where because you're so young, you don't realise the enormity of it. And it's just because I think I was the youngest player to play in a derby.
Yeah, you were.
Yeah, I think it was only for about 20 minutes though, and then Michael Ball came on, who was a couple of weeks younger than me. Someone got injured. But it was brilliant because we'd sort of played, you know, B-team games and A-team games and all that sort of stuff, and then you're trying in with the big boys and you're just in the middle of it all, and going from, I suppose, just marking normal young lads and on a Saturday to then Mark and Robbie Fowler and playing like Steve McManaman and all these like top stars at the time. So it was incredible. It was just one of those where you more or less play on adrenaline, and then a little bit down the line then you realise how good it was, and you can sort of look back and remember the atmosphere and enjoy it then rather than when you're actually doing it.
The match report from the game, it was a 1-1 draw. Dunn was booked after only 6 minutes for a foul on Fowler. was that the manager? It was Dave Watson was the caretaker manager at the time, I think. Was it he who gave you your start in that game?
Yeah.
Was his message, just go out and nail him early? Leave your mark in it?
Yeah, leave your mark in him. Just don't get booked too early. There you go. Straight in, so... Yeah, but it's one of those things, because I remember there was one part in the game when I was marking Fowler, and literally in the blink of an eye, he was in behind me and hit the crossbar with a header from across, whereas 2 seconds before, it was literally, I had him in front of me, it was fine, and the ball came in, and then I hadn't a clue where he was, and he hit the crossbar, and straight away then you start learning things, even, you know, at 17, because you think, well, I'm in the first team now, so I've made it. And then literally we're in that split second, you realise there's still a long way to go and as far as learning.
Well, the reports post-game were there were no match ratings, but it said only 17, you can already see his qualities, deceptive speed, good first touch, good clean tackler, and perhaps most importantly, his calm, unflustered manner was in no way overawed by his first derby match.
Yeah. That's Richard Dunne in a nutshell,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, right there, from your debut.
It sounds like me ma wrote that.
It sounds like... So finished 1-1 that game, David Unsworth and Robbie Fowler are sent off, Liverpool are going for the title, so you pretty much end their title hopes that day.
Yeah, I didn't remember that, but we had some really good matches against Liverpool, and they were a very good side at the time, and we probably weren't, obviously, like Kev was talking earlier about the Everton side of the 80s, we weren't acting like that, but we always held our own against them and had quite a few good matches, and there was quite a few red cards, I think, in most of the games.
Yeah, one of the games where there were quite a few red cards were actually the last time Everton beat Liverpool at Anfield, and it's so long ago you were playing in the game, it wasn't even this century. September 1999, Kevin Campbell scored after just 4 minutes, three players sent off. Everton had Frenny Jeffer sent off for fighting with Sander Vesterveld, the Liverpool keeper. He was also sent off. Steven Gerrard was then sent off as well for a high challenge on Kevin Campbell later in the game. Have you any memories of that game, the last time Everton won at Anfield?
Yeah, definitely. That's another huge game. Actually, Steve Staunton ended up in goal when Vesterveld got sent off because they'd already used the three subs, so Stan ended up in goal. But it was brilliant for us because we scored after 10 minutes or something like that. Kevin Campbell scored, so to sort of hang on in the atmosphere, and you could see how feisty it was all getting because obviously with the red cards. But it was one of those. I always felt when it was over, it was always a friendly derby. People were well done, you know what I mean? There was no anger after the matches around. It was all give everything on the field and then respect each other after. That's the way I always felt it was.
That win sounded like watching an Ireland game, Richard. Just score early, then just try and sit in for the rest of the match, then try and defend it.
Yeah, we managed to deal with that. That was the
yeah, probably right.
Steve Staunton, just looking at the match report from that 93rd minute, Staunton makes a stunning save, denying the head of Abel Xavier from 6 yards out. Yeah. Liverpool did still lose by a goal to nil. Looking at this weekend then, Liverpool in just absolutely sensational form. That front four of Salah, Firmino, Coutinho and Mane scored 13 goals between them in their last three games, 22 in the last seven. Everton defensively this season have been a shambles for a large part of it. One of the main reasons Ronald Koeman probably got the sack, the form of Williams and Michael Keane. Have you seen signs in the two games Sam Allardyce has been there that he's putting that right?
I think it's very early. I think over the long term, he definitely will put it right. The players will perform better, and I think defensively they've made mistakes individually, but as a whole team, they've just not had the energy to get around the pitch to stop things from getting at the defence. So up front, they're not working hard enough. In midfield, they weren't working hard enough, and that will all change. And whatever changes has already happened, it will be doubled for the Merseyside derby because that's the last thing the players want, is to be walking around Liverpool for the next however long with that hanging over their head. So there'll certainly be an improvement, but it's very hard with the form that Liverpool are in. They just look like they can, certainly at Anfield, they look like they're going to score every time they go forward. So it's certainly a big ask for Everton this weekend, I think.
Do you think then, when you look at that Everton dressing room now, and even with all the signings they made during the summer, that if you're in an opposition dressing room, and not even with Liverpool, but most opposition teams, look at them and go, not really much of a fight in that team. If we can get at them early, there's not too many battlers there. There's not a nice players, but guys who really you wouldn't overly want within the trenches.
I wouldn't say that. I think it's just sometimes you get into situations where things just aren't going for you, and you're losing confidence. You're afraid to do that, and then you just almost forget to do what got you to where you are, which is work hard, battle, fight, and then go. So I think whatever, if they have been maybe a bit of a soft touch in recent games or in earlier games in the season, that'll all be gone now with Sam Allardyce there. You know, and the one thing they'll have is I think he always works on sort of having how many entries into the box he can get. And that's obviously Liverpool's weakness. So you'd imagine every free kick, every throw-in, they'll all be launching them into the box and just waiting for that one mistake from a Liverpool defender, which has been known to happen. And they just hope to capitalise on that. And it's almost fingers crossed defensively to try and keep Liverpool out, because I think they've scored more goals than Man City now this season overall. And we've all been going on about how good they've been going forward.
What would you be doing if you were in the heart of that Everton defence this weekend? What's the best way to try and deal with that front four? Is it sit deep, don't give them any space in behind? Does that cause other issues?
Yeah, it does. There's all sorts of different things. It's not a one-man job and all that. You need everyone because they don't have that natural centre-forward who'll play up against the defender. You can't sit deep because then you and allow people to get on the ball in dangerous areas and turn and run at you, and that's when problems begin. So you almost have to be a little bit braver and don't let them get the ball to their feet. Get up really close to them, and if it goes over the top, you've just got to trust that the ball leader isn't perfect, or your goalkeeper's going to come and help you out, or you can read it and somehow. But I think if they sit back too deep too early, good teams have a way of getting past you eventually. Yeah. So I think it's a long game to be asked and to be sitting back.
It was seen as quite a coup when they signed Michael Keane during the summer. Questions that maybe Liverpool should have gone in for him, maybe Manchester United should have gone in for him. He's had a tough enough old time since his arrival for Burnley. What's the issue been? What is it that he was so good at last season that he hasn't been able to replicate?
I think under Ronald Koeman, he was asked to be more of a footballer than just a basic defender, which he's brilliant at. When he was at Burnley last year, he cleared his lines, he defended, he tackled. When he was in possession, if there was a simple pass on, obviously he would do it, but generally he would knock the ball away from the back line. Whereas with Everton, because they were playing three at the back or they had Ronald Koeman, who's more of a footballing manager. He wanted them to play a little bit more, and sometimes it's difficult to change mentally from being in possession and calm and relaxed, then when you lose it, to switch and be aggressive and hard and try and make tackles. Sometimes it's hard to do that, and I think he struggled with it. Along with that, playing alongside Ashley Williams, who unfortunately just had a really poor season. So when you're playing next to someone whose confidence is gone, they're not making the correct decisions, and it pulls your game off a little bit as well. So he's been unfortunate. He's had the injuries as well, and I think over the course of his contract, I think he'll turn out to be a very good signer for Everton.
Yeah, Nathan's reeled off everything about Liverpool, all the stats and everything. But how far do you think that this Liverpool side will go this season, Rich?
I think they'll entertain people. I think they'll be brilliant going forward. It's just defensively, they just concede too many goals. They make mistakes, which you don't see coming sometimes. I mean, it's in the back of your head, you know they're going to do it, but then you watch them and think, oh, they're all right. And then they just explode for 20 minutes and concede silly goals. And there's always that fear that that's going to hold them back. You would imagine in the Champions League, they probably have a better opportunity because they can beat anyone at Anfield. They can score goals. And but over the longer course of the season, it's very hard for them to win the league, I would say, when they're probably going to concede over 40 goals maybe. You know, so it's very hard.
Who do you blame for that?
You would have to say the recruitment side of Liverpool. I think sort of a similar situation where like fans or people who watch football have been going on for years saying Arsenal need a centre-half, Arsenal need this, Arsenal need that. For the last 3 or 4 years, everyone's been saying Liverpool need a centre-half. And the ones they've got are the wrong ones. They've not performed well enough. And I know the way Liverpool play, sometimes you can't have it both. They haven't got I don't think Jordan Henderson is good enough as a defensive midfielder to shield them. But yeah, I think the centre halves are probably a little bit mentally weak. They can get bullied around by centre forwards and sometimes make the wrong decisions. I think you hear reports. I mean, they've signed this Keita for 50 or 60 million, and then there was a report today. I think they were looking at another centre forward or a winger or something like that. And no. It's just like, well, just go and buy a centre half.
Yeah. Like they're spending no money.
He's not going to change it though, is he? He's not going to change it. He wants that entertaining football, and that's the thing. He's almost he's blind to the fact is that they're going to concede. It's almost if we'll be fine.
Since Lovren arrived, they've spent less than 10 million quid on defensive players. They got Matip on a free. They signed Klavan for about 4 million and Karius for 5 million.
Yeah, and Robertson. And Robertson was coming.
7 or 8 million.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, but he's not even playing.
On the team.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Even with the goalkeepers as well, everyone's saying both goalkeepers have continuously made mistakes, and whatever it is for Karius going forward, he might turn out to be good. Mignolet's not good enough, so they should ship him out and spend some money on a proven goalkeeper from somewhere.
All right, so the Merseyside derby, first up on Off the Ball on Sunday. Myself and Pat and Evan will be at Anfield, a 2:15 kickoff. Then we'll be heading to Old Trafford for the Manchester derby.
Sergio Aguero still going. Aguero! It's in! City lead 2-1. And a solo goal of the highest quality from Sergio Aguero.
Comes out to Giggs. What a pass! Michael Owen wins it in the most extraordinary way. His first taste of a Manchester derby.
By Silver, it comes from Balotelli. That's a brilliant finish. He's passed the ball into the goal. Oh, there's a message for everyone. Why always be?
Rooney! Oh, wonderful! What a goal! And what a time! In what a place! What a player! Wayne Rooney out of this world! 2-1 United!
6-1 to Manchester City. Shendo makes no United's worst ever day in the Premier League.
Yeah, I'm not too sure about the choice of song there. I think we should have gone for a bit of Stone Roses or Oasis over that one, I think. Blur.
Ender was being ironic, I think. Were you being ironic? He's nodding his head. Yeah. He's nodding his head desperately. Oh, yes, sure. He was being ironic by going with Blur.
I'm sure.
Instead of Oasis and the Stone Roses. So, the Manchester Derby, Kev and Dave are going to be there. Full live coverage, 4:30 kickoff. Richard Dunn is still with us. Main memories of the Manchester Derby. As you say, at the time, City weren't the force that they are now. There were still some big games in there, though.
Yeah, there were some great games, and certainly for us, it probably meant a lot more to us because we felt it was, well, the old thing that we were from Manchester sort of thing. We were the local team rather than the other way around. Yeah. Our fans were from there, so all our fans were around the area. And
you played in the last one at Main Road.
Yeah.
3-1 win, first time in 13 years that City had beaten United.
Was it? Yeah. Yeah,
Sean Golder.
Had a few good wins. Yeah, he scored. I think Gary Neville made a mistake and Gota got in and scored. And yeah, I mean, that's for the fans. Then it was amazing because we could go and get beat by Wimbledon or something like that. And then, but as long as we went and beat Man United or put a good performance in, the fans are happy. And it was one of those games where you're just the underdog for the day because you're playing against at the time the best team in the world. So it was always tough for us.
Yeah, there was a 4-1 win as well a couple of years later at the Etihad. John Macken scored.
Yeah.
John Macken. That was a blast from the past. How'd that happen?
Yeah. God knows. I remember Sean Roy Phillips scored a cracker towards the end.
Yeah, 4-1.
Smashing in from out in the wing, yeah.
Trevor Sinclair.
Trevor Sinclair, yeah. That was actually, I think it might have been Patrice Evra's first game, maybe. And he played left back, and we just kept sticking the ball out into Trevor Sinclair, and Trevor Sinclair just battered him, and I think he got took off at half time.
Yeah, and he was totally written off.
Hopeless. Yeah, he was awful. So, but then he obviously went on to be brilliant. So, but that's the thing, just the atmosphere and the whole the pace and the intensity of the game just completely took him by surprise.
Rich, you know, Nathan's asking me before about when the build up to the game and the Evertonians talking about the game constantly. Was that the same for that game? Was it the same Man City fans constantly talking about it maybe 2 or 3 weeks prior to it?
Yeah, I think sometimes it was almost in fear because United were winning, they were doing brilliant in European football, they were winning the Premier League every other year, so it was almost like, I hope we beat them, I hope you do well against them, I hope you battle and all that stuff, but the expectation was probably never there, whereas going into the game this weekend, I'm sure all the City fans are expecting City will beat them, but back then it was more of a hopeful thing. But people always, it was one thing that it sort of made that year. If you could just go and beat United and then they couldn't go to work happy the next day, that was all they wanted.
I don't know why I had to double check who was in charge of that 4-1 win at Eastlands. I had assumed it was Kevin Keegan, yeah. And yes, it was Kevin Keegan. That must have been a tough defence to work in when the team had Wright Phillips, Sibierski, McManaman, Sinclair, Macken, Fowler all in the starting 11. Not a lot of tracking back, I'd say.
No, I think probably Sinclair was probably a wing back. And probably Sean Roy Phillips might have been a wing back on the other side as well. So it wasn't set up to defend. It was a case of, well, we're probably going to concede, so we're just going to have to try and score as many as we can. So you would hope with the talent that we had on the side going forward that we'd be able to do it.
John Giles was on earlier. He was saying he doesn't expect Mourinho to park the bus, that Mourinho will realise that the only real way of getting at City is to go after them. Is if you sit back, you're asking for trouble. Do you think he will be that ambitious, or with Pogba out, is the only real option to sit back, let them have the ball and just put faith in your defence and your structure?
It's very hard. I think the only way that United could trouble City if they were going to squeeze up is to play a high intensity game and try and close them down and pressurise them, and with Lukaku they haven't got someone who can do that, so I think their setup will be similar to the Arsenal game, yeah. I suppose, when they sit back and they just try and hit them on the break, and they've got talented players going forward who can play when the space is there. But I think if they open up too early, I think it'll play into City's hands. And for me, Man United have to score 2 goals to win the game on Sunday. So eventually, I think he'd be quite happy if it was 0-0 for as long and he didn't force City's hand, I suppose, too much, because for City, he might be happy because they've had a tough week, City, didn't they? They've gone off the boil slightly. They're still passing the ball well now, but that little bit of intensity is gone, and then they've had a long trip to Ukraine this week, so I don't see City flying out of blocks on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Rich. I think given the fact is he did that last week against Arsenal, against a not necessarily as good a side, but it'll be a similar sort of style. I think United will try to play with on the counter with the pace that they've got. And the only thing, and the other point you made there, Rich, I think that will have a bearing that City have had to do that travel this week as well. I know they got the extra day recovery with that, but I do feel it'll have a bearing because of the lack of time on the training ground.
What do you expect United to do then with Pogba out? Who's the replacement? Is it Herrera?
I would imagine so, yeah. I don't think he's going to do anything out of the blue. I think it's just going to be as basic as he possibly can. And his whole persona suggests that he's not in it to entertain the masses. He wants the 3 points, you know, and he'll just keep that side as solid as he possibly can. And I went to the Etihad last year when they played them towards the end of the season, and it was 0-0. It was one of the worst games you've ever seen. And it was a typical Mourinho thing. And that's the way he is. I think I'd be very, very surprised if they came flying out and had a real go at Man City too early.
What has Pep Guardiola done with the City defence this season? I know John Stones is going to be missing, but the work he's done with Otamendi, the connection that back four now seem to have that really wasn't there last year, the risks that they're taking on the ball, the work that he's done over the summer, how impressive you've been? What exactly has he been doing, do you think?
They've been brilliant. I think the major thing for them all, and I know the centre-half performances have improved, but having that goalkeeper behind you makes such a big difference. Mm. If you've got someone that you can trust, they can pass the ball back to him, and when he gets it, he's brilliant himself with the ball. And it's just having that extra bit of confidence in you when the ball comes in, he's coming out, he's catching it, and he's been fantastic. And one of the big players, when City recently haven't been, I said earlier, they've not been playing as well, and it's because John Stones, I think, isn't there, and it's basically he starts everything. He's the one who takes that risky pass maybe at the start and takes a chance and gets them past that first line of defence, and then they break and they're away at you. But with Mangala in the side and Otamendi, neither of them can make that forced pass that would break the first line, and I think they've really missed him. But overall, Kyle Walker's been excellent as well for them, just having that extra bit of pace there. He comes around and does a lot of covering, so I think the way he's bought in the summer, as much as Arton has helped everyone in the defensive side.
Richard, we had John going for a Manchester United Liverpool double. What's your double for Sunday?
I go City to win 3-1 and Liverpool to win 3-1.
Even the former Everton man can't tip them. Richard, before we let you go, here in Dublin, it's 1 degree, gale force wind, it's bitterly cold, there's sleet. Go on, what's it like in the south of France?
It's a chilly 14, I think.
Is the sun out today?
The sun was out today,
beautiful. Did you go for the 10K? Did you get the 10K in?
No, not well. In my car, maybe.
God, it'd sicken you, wouldn't it? All right, Richard, great stuff.
Thanks, Richie, thank
you. All right, nice one, cheers.
Take it easy. Richard Dunn there, dialing it in from the south of France.
Got
him very jealous tonight. It's pretty cold out there. So Richard going for Liverpool, Manchester City. Get your text in 53106. We're going to take a quick break and then we're going to be talking to Graeme Hunter.
Off the ball
on News Talk
in association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Evening, Graeme.
Hey there, how are you?
So let's skip past the 2018 World Cup for just one moment. How good are Spain likely to be at Euro 2020?
I think it's in the bag already. why would that be particularly?
Because they have paired Dublin and Bilbao, which means if Ireland and Spain both qualify, we will be in the same group. And our understanding is that Spain will be top seeds, obviously.
It's ridiculous, Graeme.
That we'll be going to Bilbao.
Knowing you boys as I do, I'm surprised you went to the football, particularly 2020. What I can guarantee you is that if for in any way Ireland have to come to Bilbao for a game rather than playing in the Irish capital, then it's an awfully good night out.
Oh, yeah?
The food's very good. It's a beautiful city, and you can drink and you can party, and it's a Dublin away from home is all you need to know.
Yeah, right. I'm
if
thinking
you have to share a city with another share a group with another city. Bilbao was the one you wanted.
Well, the suggestion was that I basically was saying, well, look, I don't want to go to Bilbao because I'd fancy a bit of a spanking against Spain in Bilbao, but the lads were saying to me we'd get a spanking anyway, so we might as well go and enjoy everything. So,
well, I wish I'd rehearsed this, but I mean, I can't tell you the last time Spain played in Bilbao in San Mamés. The old San Mamés, of course, it's now the new San Mamés, which is a gorgeous stadium. It's genuinely, now joking aside, when you arrive in Bilbao, which is a beautifully constructed city in terms of the geography, with the Guggenheim on the river leading, snaking you around through the city, building up to a slight hill where the new stadium is beautiful and imposing, and of course at night lit perfectly. It's picture postcard would be the wrong word, but there's a perfection about it. You're in a city which is obsessed with football, obsessed with its team. Where the I don't know how many you guys or the listeners to Off the Ball, how many of the new stadia really turn you on, make you happy, make you feel, oh yeah, I'm breathing football here. And I'd say that those new stadia that do that for you are in the vast minority. Well, the San Mamés, which is obviously built almost, I don't know if cantilever is the right word, but they built the new San Mamés around or touching the last wall of the old San Mamés.
Right.
So that the three quarters closed the old one, and then started building, and then as the new one got ready, it was three quarters ready, and then completely ready as they made that conjoining wall part of the old stadium, first of all, and then now part of the new stadium. It's sensational, boys. Listen, I'd say don't wait for 2020. Get yourself up there for an athletic game, and please God, you know, I think they're 4 points off relegation, and you both know that one of three teams in La Liga who've never been relegated. And I fear for poor old Cucos Uganda, albeit they got a lovely 0-0 draw, a fighting 0-0 draw last week against Madrid. But boy, let's sleep. One visit Athletic at the San Mamés for a big weekend match next season, too. Just everybody cross your fingers that the Los Leones don't get relegated.
Our producer Roland says, last time Spain played in Bilbao was 1967.
Well, listen, I think my contention that I couldn't remember is reasonable there, because I was only
you weren't even there.
Yeah. Then I was 33 then, so yeah, there you go.
So the game to look forward to this weekend is Real Madrid against Sevilla. Real heading into such a busy period. They're straight off to the Club World Cup in Abu Dhabi right after this, and then straight back in to the Clásico 2 days before Christmas. Zidane and the pressure he's under, is the Club World Cup coming at a good time for him just to get out of the heat of everything in Spain?
I don't think, Nathan, anything's coming at a good time right now. Your pitch that this is the game to look forward to is right. I mean, there's a cheesy old piece of data that there's been, how many goals do you like in a fixture? 63 in the last 13. Fancy that? Sevilla Real Madrid is a fixture where defences are never on top. And you'd have to say they won't be this weekend. Zidane feels the pressure because his season has been, if not ruined, it's been chipped away at by constant injuries and suspension. He watched them last week in the San Mamés, where Ramos, with his red card, unnecessary, Carvajal and Casemiro, each for fifth bookings, ruled themselves out of the Sevilla game. They can't play. Tejero, one of the backup defenders, a youngster but who's played first-team football, also suspended. Then, much though I've admired Zidane in terms of his manner, what he's lent to the game, the trophies he's won, the brand of football, which is, it's to my taste. We've talked enough and off the ball about what's happened since Zidane took over from Benitez. I've enjoyed his reign, but he did a really daft thing. I couldn't understand it because he had options not to play Varane in midweek in that genuinely exciting game against Dortmund. He did play the Frenchman walked off injured. It's not 100% guaranteed that Varane doesn't need the weekend, but it looks like Ramos, Carvajal, Casemiro, Tejero, Varane, all out. Vallejo, the new centre half, the reason for which Pepe was allowed to go, is also injured. Bale looks like he might not be back. So the overall absences are pretty serious, albeit that Sevilla haven't come to Bernabeu and won since 2008 in a game which is a 7-goal thriller. Poor old Kehler is going to have one hell of a game. The midfield, which has not been controlling things and which is missing Casemiro, are going to have a hell of a game protecting the back four. And the back four is going to have to be a kid called Ashraf, who you might have seen once or twice. He's probably got maybe 3-4 starts overall. Nacho at centre-half. Llorente, who's a central midfielder, and a kid dropping back into central defence with Marcelo. It's for Sevilla. They've got to be sniffing the air and saying, well, if not now, then when?
Yeah. Those injuries, like it's a bit of a conveyor belt of players that seem to be constantly going in to the physios and to the doctors. And like we've seen with Gareth Bale, he's back, he's injured again. Like, is Zidane, is he publicly venting his frustration with the medics?
No, it's exactly the opposite. And whether it's the medics, I don't know. And I don't want to try and prescribe exactly what it is, but you do get whispers. And I think that it's time for him to re-examine the training that they do, which has been heavily based on quickness of touch, pressing, shooting. It's been very football-oriented rather than this periodization training whereby it's about making sure that the level of physical training, physical preparation that you do in training on a daily basis matches what's expected of you in the season. Right now, this series of sometimes minor, sometimes less minor muscle injuries, and they've been the big problem this season. I think there's a general air at Madrid about the training needs another look. Medics, let's set that aside, but Zidane, to answer your question, Nathan, is saying exactly the opposite. His tolerance for this maybe is too high. He keeps saying, this is part of football. I'm used to this. No big deal. We want to end the run of players being out with muscular injuries, but like, for example, he's had to say, it's not a mental thing for Bale. I'm going to be able to cope without, let's say, whoever it is that's missing this week. You know, take your names and chuck them in. He's been very tolerant indeed. And I think that when we look back at the end of the season and decide whether they've had as good a time as they did, and remember, they've got the two trophies to the good already, they're going to have to probably end up playing Gremio, who look powerful and who are very match sharp in the World Club final. It's not Real Madrid's norm to go out there and lose. I think they start favourites. So that could be a third trophy before Christmas. But at the end of the season, when we look back, I think one of the things we'll be looking back and saying, did the physical side of training at Valdebebas go well enough?
Yeah, two other sides this weekend, Graham. Barcelona, top of the league, against a sixth-place Villarreal. Villarreal not in the best of form. They've lost the last two. I see they've only one win in five. Is the potential here where Barca could slip up at Villarreal?
I think there's got to be that, Kevin. I think that if you look at the records, Barca have dropped points to draws in three of their last games away to Villarreal. Villarreal, okay, have looked vulnerable, but they are a good side. You know, should be any doubt about that. It's hit them hard, I think, the fact that they've not coped well with the mix of European football and league football. They've established leads and then tossed them away. They've been looking to get their own, you know, number one goalkeeper back, but they're very quick up front. When they led against Sevilla a couple of weeks ago in one of the games of the season, they scored two absolutely blindingly quick goals. And if you were to be critical of Football Club Barcelona, it is that they don't control the ball, they don't control midfield. They're just another team now, but with good players. It's not taking the ball, strangling a game, Messi erupting into something special, and then, hey presto, you'll never see the ball again. So they're vulnerable. They're definitely vulnerable. Whether they lose this or not, I don't know. But the great thing is that Bosker of a game at the Bernabeu, Madrid against Sevilla, comes first on Saturday night. So if Madrid cope with all their problems and win and Barca go down to Villarreal in the Ceramica Stadium, they're under big, big pressure. And although Barca have begun to react well to pressure, the Valencia game, the Juventus game, boy, oh boy, do you completely trust them? Are you absolutely sure they don't drop more points, having dropped, four in the last couple of league games? No, I don't trust it. It's a big weekend in the La Liga race, particularly if, against all of this, Madrid were to cut the gap and then go and become world champions and come back to the Clásico. Because believe me, lads, the countdown has begun.
Yeah, December 23rd. Cannot wait. Quick word before you go on that boy, Cristiano Ronaldo, fifth Ballon d'Or of his career tonight.
Yeah, it's funny. Look, Nathan, go down the list. Who's playing well? Ramos has just, in that long list of the Ballon d'Or, Ramos has just been sent off for the 24th time. Gigi Buffon's not going to the World Cup. Benzema's banned from France and can't score. Griezmann's not banned from France, but wouldn't know what to do with a stringed instrument like, say, a banjo and a cow's backside. On the list, there aren't many who's playing very well. And Ronaldo, right now, since getting sent off against Busson in the Super Cup, has been playing dismally. He's under huge... Oh, my God, what does he do? He uses Dortmund to become the first player ever to score in every group game in the Champions League, and that gave us an echo of why he's a Ballon d'Or winner, because in the spring, when he was thrashing in goals sequentially against Bayern Munich home and away, against Atleti in the semi-final, against Juventus in the final, and in that closing section of the league, when Barca had gone to the Bernabeu and won, he then finishes up with, what, 2, 4, 6 goals in the last four games to ensure Madrid are champions. If the Ballon d'Or is about trophies and goals and glory, he's the man. Great vote. If it's about the best player, look at him in recent weeks and you'd wonder, really?
Yeah, he did it when it mattered.
That's all that counts. That's all that counts. Listen, let him polish his Ballon d'Or. He's got the same as Messi. And his wee boy says, Daddy, you've got the same as Messi and you're better than Messi. What a proud night for him. I'm happy for him. I'm a fan of Ronaldo. It's just, what's the Ballon d'Or all about? Best player?
Yeah.
Or best performances? Most trophies?
It's a conversation for another day.
Take your money, take your pick.
All right, great stuff, Graham. We'll talk to you next
time. Thanks, Graham.
Cheers, fellas.
Off the Ball on News Talk.
In association with the Air Sport app, allowing you to cast your favourite sporting action from your tablet or mobile phone straight to your TV.
Welcome back. We're almost done for tonight, but the FA Cup third round will bring us into 2018. The TV fixtures have been revealed, not usually a big story. But Manchester United's 13-year run of 58 televised FA Cup matches has come to an end.
I never thought I'd see it, but yeah, it's gone. That's it, done and dusted now. There's some big games, though, that's the thing. Merseyside derby being one, the big derby that not too many people were familiar with, the Crystal Palace-Brighton derby as well, that's another one.
Suddenly it's one of the biggest derbies in English football.
Yeah.
Liverpool-Everton's on the Friday night at 8 o'clock.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? That's a good
live
game.
Live on BBC One, you want to get on that one. That'll be... I would bet a couple of quid that'll be the most watched game of football in England. Not a World Cup's on.
Oh, yeah.
I was going to say it'll be the most watched domestic game of football in England next year.
This year, it's just next year. It's just into next year, isn't it? Yeah, you'd be right.
Friday night, 8 o'clock, Liverpool, Everton.
Yeah, right up there. Right up there.
Now, unfortunately, they'll both have played about 5 games in the previous 10 days.
Yeah, but do you know what it is as well, though, Rich? I think the interesting thing is it's VAR is going to be used in the FA Cup. First time it's going to be used. Sorry, Kenny was calling Jer. Dave the other day as well, so sorry about that. But what I'm saying to you is that the VAR is going to be used. Crystal Palace that game.
I didn't realise this.
Brighton Crystal Palace. Now, this must be introduced in just coming into the FA Cup now. Yeah. You said we've been calling for it, certainly in the Premier League. The Premier League have kept the distance from it. They've wanted others to go and try it out before them. They've been quite happy to allow others to go and do it. But the FA Cup, under the FA jurisdiction, now the FA have allowed it to go ahead, so it's going to be used in that game.
So Brighton against Crystal Palace is going to be the first competitive match in England in which video replays will be used to overturn refereeing decisions, and it's the only game in the third round. They're probably going to try and expand it. They could have done Liverpool-Everton, but they decided it could be too controversial.
Yeah, that's probably it. That's exactly it, actually, yeah. But it's a big one, isn't it? It is a big one. We'll probably see it in the Premier League over the next year or so, won't we? That'll be the thing.
All right, good stuff, Kev. You'll be on OTB AM
Thanks,
in
Dave.
The morning.
Dave.
Whatever.
Sorry.
Whatever, Kenny. Adrian Barry and Owen Sheehan will be on OTB AM as well. Some exclusive footage also from tonight's roadshow with Warren Gatland. That is also coming up on tomorrow's show. You will hear a good chunk of that from 7 o'clock. Final word on Gurushi. This topic came up before in the radio and some listener explained it. Grushy comes from Gold Rush. Grushy, you're welcome, says Ferg. However, the next text was, it's a grushy, a cross between a rush and a grab. Tonight's mystery voice was Dustin Johnson. Our winner is Gary Muldoon. Well done to you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 7. Good luck.
And we shall wonder if one day our game is played on the other planets. We will have interplanetary competitions.
You job now is to stand by our new manager.
I always said if I was Aladicio, they'd probably say I was more of a tactical genius.
If my granny had bought, you'd be the granddad.
Big Sam Aladicio, that's right.